I'd like to call the meeting to order. If we could all rise, Mr. Crawford, could you lead us in the pledge?
My pleasure. Could you please rise and face the flag and follow after me, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
We'd like to apologize for starting late. In one matter in closed session to report out on was item number one, complaint by parent pertaining to alleged discriminatory policies and practices of Paragon Charter School. Government Code 35146 and Government Code 54957. Regarding item one in closed session, the board will give direction to staff and legal counsel to prepare a report for future consideration by the board. Next, we have our student representative for the Board of Trustees, Lauren.
Hello. At MHS, March is a month of school spirit. We hold a month-long event called March Madness where students and staff dress up every day of March. For example, today is Armed Forces Day. Along with dress-up days, the sophomore class is putting on the Sadie Hawkins Dance next week, the 20th. We also have a few fundraisers going on. The first is Pennies for Patients, which is a fundraiser to help raise money for children with leukemia. The second fundraiser that starts this Friday is ASB will be selling Cease Candy to raise money for leadership students to attend CATA Camp. If you are interested in participating in either of these fundraisers, please contact me, either myself or Mr. Ryan Wallace, at our school emails. Lastly, MHS has added boys volleyball to spring sports schedule, and we hope the best for them this season. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from board members. Ms. Scott?
Yes, I would like to say, first of all, I'd like to thank you all for coming out here tonight, as always. And I had an opportunity to go to Kynott School to read across America to such a fine, well-behaved group of students. They really appreciated me being there, and I appreciated being there with them. I also had a chance on last Friday to attend the spelling bee at Edgewater School. That went very, very well. Very bright students that studied so very, very hard. And so moving forward with that competition, I look forward to seeing that. And thank you, Kynott, and thank you, Edgewater, for the invite.
Mr. Davis.
I got a chance along with Jim Fleury and Susan to visit with Joe Seiler at McKinney to just see how things are going and what kinds of things that he's dealing with. And he's a teaming guy. He's doing a great job. We had a chance to visit with some employees, and I had a chance to review the area that they're looking at the special needs improvements. So that was very enlightening. And then I also read or participated in the Read Across America at Kynock, and I was amazed at how organized they were. I was number 144, so the people that came out and participated in that, it's incredible. And like Susan said, the kids are just amazing and seem very respectful. And once you started reading, everybody's paying attention, you know. And the last thing I'll bring up is the visited with Rob Gregory at Olivehurst, and we toured his garden area, which the previous weekend he had a huge amount of volunteers going out there and clearing it up, and it looked like it just been installed. And so he's very excited about rejuvenating that program, and I look forward to seeing their progress. Thank you.
Mr. Allison, Mr. Boom, Mr. Fleury.
Usually I do Read Across America, but my doctor said those over 60, he advised you do not go around crowds. He gave me very good information. And of course, this flu epidemic is serious, and I want to say I really appreciate the communication from the district. The communication is great what we're getting, and that's what we need, because there's a lot of fear out there. It's personal to me because my grandparents both died in the flu epidemic in 1918 and left 8 kids orphaned. Excuse me, and I grew up with those stories, so I know how serious this is. But our district's information is, I'm just astounded. It's so good. Also, went Mr. Seiler, visited with him at McKinney, and it was great. He is a real team player, and we just recently put my grandkids out of a private school back into McKinney, and I'm very glad we did that. And then one event I did attend, even though it was a large group, was the Lyndhurst High School banquet on March 27th, I believe. And it was so well done. The culinary kids were amazing. They were so professional. It was a restaurant style meal. The bread was homemade. The cake was homemade. And they changed for their Hall of Fame to recognize kids that have gone through Lyndhurst High School, and it's amazing. 27 are teaching there that went through Lyndhurst High School. They're either aides or classified, and it was what was really neat was Randy went, and he knew one of the employees, and several of them I had at Yuba Gardens, and so that was neat. They really did a professional job, and I'm glad that's one event I did attend.
Mr. Crawford.
Well, as many of my other colleagues, I always enjoy Dr. Seuss reading day. What made it most appealing and comical this year was I got to not only do the fifth grade, but the first and second grades. So amazing with the first graders and the second graders that they're not afraid to, during the Q&A time, who are you? How tall are you? My grandma knows you, which brought me, got my eyes a little wide. Do you have kids? And this is before I started reading, but they're not afraid to ask. And as I started reading, show us the pictures. And I show them the picture, and then I get lost. And anyhow, it was fun. And I always enjoy it, and I hope I never grow tired of it. Thank you.
Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Operating Engineers Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Sorry, I have germs. Good evening, everybody. So each week we do a kudos here at the meeting. And Mr. Cena had said something earlier this week when we were meeting, and it was about leadership. And so I think he's given the analogy in here before with you guys about the birds flying and how the bird up front kind of takes the load for everybody, and you have to learn to kind of fall in and have the load taken from you. I think the epitome of a good leader is somebody who's able to lead, but is also able to fall back and follow. And so in the last few weeks, as we've been dealing with, as you guys mentioned, the communications about coronavirus and kind of strategic planning for what we would do and keeping operations continuous through fires or anything else, we've had one person to kind of step up to lead those communications. And so we all have very full jobs during the day. So Amace wanted to give kudos to Jessica Guth for all of the work that she's done on communication out to the families and working with the health department to make sure that we stay on the leading edge of information for our community. So thank you to Jessica.
Supervisory unit. Public comments. We do have a public comment card. Persons wishing to address the board are required to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask that they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. Mr. Jason Roper, if you could please state your name for the record.
Good evening. My name is Jason Roper. I am a parent of four kids in the district, but also I work for Yuba County Probation Victim Services. So with me tonight is Jax, and some of you have met Jax, but Jax is one of three of our service animals that we have that are with the probation department. I wanted to introduce them to you guys. I will not tonight, but I will come around individually and give you guys an opportunity to hang out with Jax. But Jax is a fixture on the school sites when something tragic happens or a crisis comes up. All three of our animals, Tuska, Ethan, and Jax, are available to your students and staff and have been for a number of years. So I wanted to just highlight a couple things. Jax goes to school. He is a great learner. He goes to McKinney School once a week. We try to get him there once a week, and he is with my son Ty or with Tracy Hutchison, who is a probation officer. So McKinney School has been gracious to allow Jax, one, to be available to their students, but two, to also acclimate to large environments, kids, men that are bald and taller than me, because he has a little anxiety around men that are taller than me and bald. But he's been great there. I will tell you just real quick, because I only have 3 minutes. We, in the last 3 weeks, we have interviewed three kids from McKinney School. And when I say interview, the interviews are not, hey, we're here to offer you a job. It's usually something really horrendous or horrific has happened in their life. And all three of these young people, when they came into the office and saw Jax running around, were like, hey, that's our dog. That's our McKinney dog. And so just as an example, his availability to McKinney School and to the other schools has been tremendous in allowing us to be able to garner information to help keep your students safe, our students safe, but also to help them when they return to school and have some anxiety or are fearful. Our judge, our juvenile court judge, has also ordered a few times that the dog attend school, which is interesting. But I just wanted to introduce you guys to Jax tonight. I do have some trading cards for you, so whenever kids come into the office or when they're at the school, they are given a card and a sticker. So I have these for you. So I will be available, not tonight, I'm gonna leave, but you guys can call me. My number actually is on the back of the card, and I hope to hear from all of you at some point. So thank you very much for your time.
Hey, Jason, I have three dogs myself, but if you want to hand over to Jackson. I'd gladly welcome him home. He, what a great dog. He's very attentive. Look at him. Look at that guy.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason, for coming tonight and all that you do for our area and our students and our children. Thank you.
Great cards, by the way.
Next, we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Together, serving every student every day in every way. Currently, this hedgehog concept is taking form with the coronavirus. This past Friday, all school superintendents from Sutter and Yuba counties were invited to a meeting Friday morning to hear Dr. Homer Rice give a presentation on the coronavirus and to educate and bring really all districts in the Yuba-Sutter area under a common shared understanding so that we can best serve students and our community. From that, you saw from various districts a very consistent message being sent. This will continue tomorrow. There will be meetings and other information shared. Certainly any information that we get goes to our single point of communication, our program services director, Jessica Guth. And then from there, she acts as our point guard and is distributed to all of our leadership team and then out to our schools and our community. We're preparing for, we sent direction to our administrators today on how to handle different situations, more specific. Each day, each couple series of days, we get more clarified and send that out. Yesterday, Mr. Williams sent out surveys identifying internet access at students' homes. We're looking at trainings for teachers. We're trying to build up our muscle and our ability to provide some forms of distance learning in rudimentary ways to begin with, and then expanding to other forms, which would help us both during the current situation and when we're facing public safety power shutdowns. With that, I hope you got the message about the update. The update number, I think it's 4 now, on the public shutdowns. If you have any questions of that, please see me. Together, serving every student every day in every way. Also, tomorrow, we're working. Mr. Greco's running point on our LCAP. We're meeting with all the districts in Yuba County for a shared training and a shared working on developing the LCAP, in particular, being able to identify how we're using money for targeted students in the concentration and supplemental monies. And we're continuing to get surveys through the LCAP video and the survey to students, parents, and community members. And we'll have our district advisory LCAP committee meeting on March 25th at 4:30. And Mr. Boom and Mr. Rasmussen are participating in that. Thank you. And Thursday, we are going to meet with the Yuba-Sutter Community Task Force. At the last board meeting, I shared this is the group Sam from Sanger. There'll be many, many church pastors in attendance, and their question is, what can we do to serve students and schools? And school administrators from Yuba County, Marysville, Yuba City Unified will be, it'll be a sharing. And ideally, it's to start a synergy of community and schools working together to help communities and help students. And what happened at Sanger is lifted student performance, which is what we're all after. We're also meeting with Yuba City Unified tomorrow. And so we're building those relationships with other school districts and trying to join resources so that we can best serve students. And then next Tuesday, March 17th, the Yuba Water Agency, their curriculum committee is going to share the advancements that they're working with the next generation science standards and the support that they're providing schools. And so eventually someday we'd like to have a report from that committee so you can all hear the exciting things that are happening and how the community is really investing and how we're trying to work with them. So together, serving every student every day in every way. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Just one point of clarification. On the March 25th LCAP meeting, I am going to be out of town. So Mr. Randy Davis is going to be there to represent the board with Mr. Boom. March 25 at 4:30, right in here, Rocco? Right in here. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that board members would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Under new business, Board of Trustees, we have resolution 2019-20/28. Excuse board members' attendance at meeting of the Board of Trustees. Purpose of the agenda item. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the resolution to pay Susan Scott for a missed board meeting on February 11th, 2020. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
We have a motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Boom. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? One opposed, Mr. Rasmussen. Motion carries, 6-1. Number 2, naming the Marysville High... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Any abstentions? One abstention, Mrs. Scott. So motion carries, 5-1. Thank you very much. Number 2, naming of the Marysville High School Agriculture Barn, Greenhouse, and Garden Area, the Marjorie McGill Agricultural Complex. Mrs. Matthews, would you like to, or just pick one of your students there, let them talk. Or y'all come on up there and talk.
Yes, thank you for considering the request to name the agricultural complex after Marjorie McGill. It was difficult in the letter to capture all of her accomplishments as a student of our district, and then as a young person out in the world and a student of the world. So thank you for reading the letter from us, and I will let Gracie say something. She's one of our student representative today, and then if you have any questions for us, we're happy to answer them.
Marjorie McGill, throughout for students, has always been an inspiration. I myself have taken on extemp speaking, a speaking contest in which I have 30 minutes to prepare and am thrown in with a topic. It's terrifying, but she was always that inspiration for me, and so it's very personal for me to be able to name this wonderful resource for our students after a person that has inspired many to go above and beyond with offices and also inside the classroom and in the curriculum. So I hope you all consider this and thank you for letting me speak here today.
Marjorie was by far my most, I hate to say intelligent student I've ever taught, but she was probably the most well-respected student when it comes to other students and seeing her, as Gracie kind of said, students looked up to her. She was somebody special. She was completely different than any other student that's ever come through my classroom door. She is our only female student to ever receive the American FFA degree, and since she received it, we have not had another one. She is our most celebrated student. If you went through her record book on how many awards and how much recognition Marjorie had received in the FFA, not even including what she did in 4-H and Girl Scouts and every other organization she was a part of. She was an amazing person, and to be able to have our facility have that, have her name on it forever and have students ask who that was and we could tell her story would be an amazing thing. So we would really hope that you guys will all approve to have the facility named the Marjorie McGill Agriculture Complex. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you very much for coming tonight. Next we have Buildings and Grounds Department. The contract with Western Engineering Contractors Incorporated for the Oliverse Elementary Site Improvement Project number 8198. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board award the Oliverse Elementary School Site Improvements to Western Engineering Incorporated and approve the contract for the amount of $344,500 with a 10% contingency of $34,450 totaling, and not to exceed the amount of $378,950. Do we have anyone to speak on that? Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome. So we did the bid opening, and as you can see, the lowest bidder came in at $344,500. This project entails all the hardscape at Oliverse Elementary. It redoes the bark box, takes the bark box out where there is a, I don't know what you want to call it, it's almost like a wood barrier. It also gets rid of a lot of safety concerns out there. They have a lot of gravel that's coming out onto the blacktop, uneven surfaces, ball walls where kids are hiding, things like that. So this project includes a lot of drainage, grading, ADA path of travel, gets a lot of those safety concerns addressed that have been out there for a long time. So I think it's a good thing for the site, and I think it'll be a great project. Again, we're anticipating a little bit lower cost, but due to some unforeseen things as we were going through the job scope, you know, we're happy to see that the bid came at 344 because we were thinking it was going to come in a lot higher than that after we uncovered some grading issues there.
Well, I do know drainage is one of the big things that would be nice to be able to fix at that site. So,
right.
Yeah.
Are you confident that, although it's the lowest bidder, have you worked with Western Engineering before? Or are they?
To my acknowledgement, we have not done work with Western Engineering, but I did make some phone calls with other districts that have used them. They have had nothing bad to say about them. They just said they run a tight ship and that if there's anything unforeseen, they'll let us know and we will see change orders. However, I'm a very big stickler on what's justifiable and what's not. Obviously, if we feel that there's an unforeseen that's justifiable, we'll do our due diligence to look at the time and materials on those change orders. But as far as what I've done research with other districts that have used them, they've been very pleased with the outcome of their work.
Thank you, Travis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mr. Rasmussen, I have a question. You have a not to exceed amount with a 10% contingency. I mean, to me, that would be more indicative of a lease-leaseback or a modified lease-leaseback where you took bids on it and did a lease-leaseback. How do we do a not to exceed amount when we don't know if there's going to be change orders in excess of the 10%?
When we're looking at the not to exceed amount, it basically gives my department the leeway of going up to 10%. So the project doesn't stop. So I'm coming back to the board and saying, hey, I need an extra amount of money. So stop the project. It basically gives me kind of a 10% budget to be able to go ahead and handle for unforeseens. In the event that something major comes out, obviously we'd have to go through the process of coming before the board saying, hey, we're looking at a 10% contingency. Now we're obviously we hit a $100,000 snag, we're gonna come back to the board and let you know. But usually they're gonna be small things. They pull something up, maybe they see a DI drainage irrigation that needs to be lifted that was asphalted over 20 years ago, right? So those type of things is what that 10% contingency is. So ideally when you see the not to exceed, it basically is letting you guys approve the fact that there's this little 10% pot that will keep that project moving, which is indicative with modernizations. It's about a 10% is what we're seeing now that people hold on to that. That way the project continues to move forward.
Any other questions or discussion? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you very much, Travis.
Thank you.
Next we have Business Services, 2019-20, second interim financial report. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2019-20 second interim financial report for the period ending of January 31, 2020. Mrs. Lossing.
Good evening, Board President Rasmussen, board members, Superintendent Cena. I'm happy to present this evening the current year second interim budget report for you. So I'd like to acknowledge our very expert fiscal department director, Jennifer Pasalia, and then Amy Littlefield in the fiscal department and the rest of the folks that help prepare all of our budget documents. They do an excellent job, and I wanted to be sure and acknowledge them. Thank you, ladies. We'll jump right into, I like to show you the LCAP budget cycle so that you can see and understand what numbers that we're talking about this evening. We are in the current year, and we're talking about this year's budget. As you notice from the flow chart, there's actually three different years within a year that we address. The blue, it's color-coded by current year being blue. Next year, for budget development, 2021 is green. And then between July and by September, we've gone to the prior year and closed the books and presented that. So it's just kind of a, the numbers that we're talking about specifically tonight are comparing this year's budget from the report you received in December, the first interim, to the adjustments made and where we are right now for second interim. So the main assumption, budget assumptions that we developed the budget with, probably the biggest change was our average daily attendance, which is what drives our local control funding formula, where we get most of our money for our general fund, which is the main operating fund of our district. And from first interim to second interim, we have a decrease of about 90 student or average daily attendance, the amount of time the students actually attend. And I'll show you the amount that is going to reduce our revenue in another slide. Our unduplicated pupil percentage remains unchanged at a little over 81%. Here's lottery revenue, our mandated cost claims reimbursement, a small grant we get each year. And then also just a reminder that our state and federal restricted programs are self-funded so that they balance depending on if the revenue goes up, their expenses can go up. If the revenue goes down, so do their expenses, except for the two that are special education and our routine restricted, routine restricted maintenance, which we contribute from the restricted side of the budget to the unrestricted side to fund those. So I know this is a lot of numbers, but I just wanted to show you a summary from first interim to second interim on our revenues and just kind of highlight. I use those little comment bubbles to kind of highlight what the main changes are. So this shows revenues, expenditures, and other financing sources. And so you see a big decrease on the local control funding formula amount of revenue. but there's a bit of a technicality as to part of that. The amount that 90 students generated decreased our revenue was a little over $880,000 that you see in that bubble. The rest of that is a change in the law, AB 2235. When the local control funding formula first started, all of they had no way to fund County Office of Education ADA, so they ran it. It was always run through school districts. This law, AB 2235, changes that, and now they're funded separately. So that difference in decrease is also picked up as a difference in decrease in revenue under the other outgo, that very last bubble that shows that little over 1.1 million decrease. So when you take that and the 880,000, you see that it's just offsetting. They're taking away that county office ADA, but they're also taking away the transfer of it. So it's a wash, that difference. So the impact is the 886,000 of reduced revenue. I just wanted to explain that because it shows up in the variance. The other noticeable changes are the adjustments for staff position vacancies. You know, we're quite a way through the fiscal year, the school year, so when we've budgeted to make sure we have enough budget as vacancies are filled, we can look now and remove excess budget that we know we didn't spend. So you see there on the certificated classified salaries and the benefits, the reductions in expense there. And then there's an increase, that third bubble from the bottom, you see an increase there in capital outlay for budgeting for some of our facility projects that was put in place from first interim to second interim, that change. So those are the main changes. Now this is another one that looks really complicated, but what I wanted to show you here was this shows across the top 5 years, starting with the current year, and then the next 4 years. We're required to do the current year and two additional, but we went out two more because of that future certificates of participation payment, and we hadn't seen what that looks like, I don't believe, in the first interim. So the little circles show, starting on the left, we're moving $2 million to Fund 17 each year in anticipation of those future payments because they started about $2.8 million a year in 2023. And so you see across there that $2 million, $2 million, $2 million, $2 million each year. And then when we get to 22-23, you see it go to zero because that's when we start making the payments. So you see up above that zero, the $102 million, substantially more than the prior year unrestricted expenditure of $96.9 million. That's where we start including that payment. And the same thing for the 23-24 projected year. Down at the bottom, I needed to add in that Special Reserve Fund 17 money because that's part of our reserve. Right now, the money in there is for future certificates of participation payment, but we need to make sure we include that amount, what's in Fund 17, with our general fund ending fund balance to get a total picture of what our reserves are. And then there's more that makes it a little clearer, I think. And so here's our percentage at the bottom in the blue. This is the same thing, but more information on the actual fund balance. And so you see the green line is that combined general fund and Fund 17 ending balance each year. And then as a percentage of the combined amount. So, and you can see it declining through the years. So then this is one more look at it and doing a bit of a bar chart that shows that decline. And then I wanted to also give you some information, good information on a multi-year projection. So we develop those based on what we know right now. As those data points change, like our enrollment, the amount of COLA the state's gonna provide, then our projections will change. So the multi-year projections are also kind of always evolving, just like our budget does. And then we use the multi-year projection. The County Office of Education has oversight of every school district's budget, and then the State Department of Ed also. They use the multi-year projection as an indication of the financial stability of our district. That's another purpose of a multi-year projection. And then just to clarify too, a projection's not as firm as a forecast, which would actually predict what's gonna happen. The projection is just what we think will happen based on what we know right now, knowing that it will change as the circumstances change. So, just so we have that information. And then we're off onto other funds of the district. This is just letting you know that we expect all of our other funds to end the year with a positive fund balance, yay. And then I always like to kind of look ahead. What is it that we're looking at and maybe have concern regarding? And that would be that our pension costs continue to increase, which you've been hearing for several years now, and there's been a little bit of relief on the amount of increase for the state teachers' retirement system. The state's bought down some of that, but it still is increasing, and as well as the CalPERS for our classified staff. Special education costs continue to increase each more, and we know that we have a very excellent special education program here at MJUSD. It's just that the state and feds don't fund it appropriately, so we've been having to contribute more each year. But there's really good news about that, and that's that the state is anticipated to be providing more funding and even equalizing. Apparently every district has different amounts per student that they receive for special education dollars. And so they're trying to equalize that and bring the lower ones up to a particular standard while holding the ones that get more harmless. But we're one of those that will receive more because we're so lowly funded. I'm not sure that's a term, but anyway, we're funded less than others, so we're going to be getting some of that money, and we don't know exactly yet until they enact the budget, but that's good stuff. And then again, that certificates of participation payment begins in 2023, that's resulting in our declining district reserves. And then again, with this coronavirus, the COVID-19, we're not sure yet what the full effects of that will be, so not yet known. And now we're all the way to next steps, and that would be asking the board to approve our second interim budget report with a positive certification. You know, there's three types: positive, qualified, and negative. And positive means that the district can meet this year's expenditures and the next 2 years through our multi-year projection and, you know, be fiscally solvent. And then we request, we feel because of the declining reserves and the fact that we have that bit of structural deficit where we're spending more than we're bringing in, we'd like to have the fiscal department analyze the budget as a very first step for potential budget savings to include in the 2021 budget development year, and then bring back those recommendations to the board probably in May, if we can't get to it by the end of April. And then we can incorporate those into next year, whatever savings. And I would call it maybe low-hanging fruit going through. You know, we have thousands of account codes in our budget. Just go through it line by line to see where there's things we typically, because of the size of the district, we roll the budget forward each year. So we're gonna do a multi-year comparison and see where, if we're not fully expending, let's capture those dollars and create budget savings with them. And then we'll, April, May, June, we'll be preparing the estimated actuals for this year. That'll be your final look at this year's budget when we adopt next year's budget. So that is the report, and I'm glad to answer any questions if I can.
Do we have any questions? So actually I have one, Mrs. Lossing. Can you go back to the 5-year projection, one without the circle, that one right there.
Uh-huh.
You know, as we talked yesterday, the, you know, if the board members will look out there in the 2020 or 23-24 school year, and if we look at our total fund balance, the third row up from the bottom, it actually looks like it's a negative $1.8 million. So it seems as though when we have this fund balance plus the Fund 17, it really is kind of skews the numbers. Without that Fund 17 in there, excuse me, it looks to me like we would have a negative fund balance of almost $2 million. So that seems pretty concerning to me, and that's not very far off that we need to really take a look at.
Another way to have prepared this would have been to move money from Fund 17 to zero that out at a minimum, and then Fund 17 would be a reduced number. We would still have the same green line number there. But yes, in hindsight, it was probably, we probably should have moved the Fund 17 to cover that negative. There, we should not have a general fund projection with a negative balance. So in the future, we could either move all of the Fund 17 funds into the general fund and assign them or commit them, which requires a board resolution for the purpose of the COPS payments, which is another, it's kind of six one way, half a dozen the other, but whatever is the easiest and simplest and most transparent for people to understand is what we want to do.
And I think the other thing, Ms. Lossing, as we discussed yesterday, if we're looking at doing the refunding of those COPS to see if we can get a lower interest rate, and maybe at that point in time, may we go ahead and pay that $8.9 million out of the Fund 17 to try to reduce that amount. So again, we would only be looking at making that 2.8 a year of whatever the reduced amount of the COPS payment would be, maybe.
So, we could certainly do an analysis on that to see what the best savings would generate for the district.
Yeah, to make it fair to Ms. Lossing, that can's been kind of kicked down the road the last several years. I remember talking to Mr. DiGiulio about it way back when. He kind of kicked the can down the road for quite some time, and now this has all kind of been put on her back all at once when everything's coming due, when there should have been a plan in place, and kept pushing, but we didn't get much results. So.
Well, now it's only a couple years. Now it's only a couple years off.
Pressing it.
So thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I would bring attention to the revised pages of the second interim that we received earlier. So I do think that when we make a motion, we need to make sure that we have those revised pages also a portion of the motion. So. With that said, is there a motion?
A motion to approve second interim financial report with the revisions.
We have a motion by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 2. Request for proposals for facilities master plan services. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the request for proposals, RFP, for facilities master plan services. Mrs. Lossing, Mr. Barnett.
Yes, thank you. Our current facilities master plan was originally prepared in 2016. Then just recently I found that there had been an update in 2017. But there are also some more specific site assessments that would be very valuable to the district. And there also would be probably Travis could speak better to it, but there's two studies that the district's done regarding facilities that we would like to incorporate. And just to back up just a moment, originally we were bringing this forward because everyone had such high hopes that Prop 13 would pass and we would have a significant school facility bond with funds at the state level to generate down to us, the school districts, to help us with our facility needs. And unfortunately, it did not pass. One of the requirements and something that the, I don't know if it's office, I think it's the Office of Public School Construction has determined, is that school districts haven't had adequate facility master plans in the past to help with how, you know, big the projects are, how complicated, and the financing and all of that piece. So they were requiring current facility master plans before you'd be eligible for any of that state money that now is not going to be there. But we anticipate that any future eligibility will require a current facility master plan. And I just wanted to say, too, that all of the work that was done previously is still good work. And everything that's relevant, and especially the historical information about our, all of the good facility work that's been done here in the last 10 years, my goodness, that'll all still be part of the new plan. It's just that specifically those facility assessments, frequently architecture firms are the ones that prepare facility master plans, and they have all that intricate detail. Would you like to speak to that, Mr. Yeah. Barnett?
Yeah, so as Ms. Lawson is going over with the facilities master plan, and really what this does is, in 2016 and 2017, we did the study. We came through, you guys remember going through, and looking at projects and a list and prioritizing these projects. As Ms. Lawson has stated, OPSC has made these strict guidelines, and they've made these facilities master plans. They're called extensive facilities master plans. At the time that we originally did this here at the district, I hate saying it's kind of like checking a box, but it was checking the box to say we have a facilities master plan. The information was good. It got us where we needed to be. However, to go ahead and move things forward when we're looking at budgets, interim budgets, we need an extensive facilities master plan. You guys will remember in 2016, the board approved a arc flash study. It was for over $200,000, and we had an ADA study go out throughout the district. That information has now been sitting on a shelf, and that type of information that we've paid for already needs to be incorporated into some kind of facilities master plan. So it's not that we would be completely scratching what we have originally, it's really building on top of it. Now that we have more data, we have more things in place, we have structures within departments, we really need to have a forward-thinking plan in place. So that means that budgeting for the future, it isn't just a vague facilities master plan. We can really dive into it and start looking at how many fixtures are in each school, how many HVAC units are on there. So if you were to look at our facilities master plan now, it's lacking a lot of detail. It gives you the general consensus of that we have HVAC units, doesn't tell you how many we have, what the age of them are. So when we talk about an extensive facilities master plan, it goes through where you, each one of you or anybody in the public can pick it up and say, McKinney School has 93 HVAC units that are all matched out at 25 years old, of which four have been replaced, which we project $750,000 worth of modernization to fix this. So it really allows everybody, the board, the public, and all of us looking forward to extensively look at this and budget accordingly. And not just be kind of taking shots in the dark and saying, we think it's going to be this, but we really don't know. So to get into that type of detail is why the state is now saying, hey, we want to see this detail and we want to see it in a plan and see that action plan. Because as we all know, AB 48/Prop 13 didn't pass, but I can guarantee you there will be more funding available. And if OPSC and the state has already kind of showed their cards saying this is what we're expecting, we don't want to come in at a later point and say, oh wait, you know, now we're a year behind to get this information. So to me, it's kind of like they've showed, the state has kind of showed us what direction and what they're going to be looking for, and what we have currently isn't going to satiate what their request is.
Any questions, discussion?
Now, what kind of a cost estimate are you thinking when you get these proposals?
I think I would have to say, I think when we first go into it, honestly, it's, we're kind of going into this blind. So when we put our request for proposals, our qualifications, we're going to interview them. We're going to be very clear on what information we have, kind of like we're talking about the ADA study, the arc flash studies. It's basically like gathering all these pieces of information. And so Ms. Lossing and I and the team, we're going to put those at the table and let these firms look at it. By that point, they should be able to make the analysis, say, oh, check the box, you've already done an ARC flash study. So that's, you know, there you know there's a saving. So yeah, so, and sorry, the electrical systems, we're talking about ARC flash, they call them an ARC flash study, but it has to do with all the electrical panels in the district. So things like that, when we bring it to the table, should reduce costs because we put the information out there. So I couldn't really tell you what that's going to be.
So are you going to identify 2-3 companies and do bids?
Absolutely. So when it advertised, that's what their quest is for. We put it out and we see who comes to us, and basically it's like an interview process. They're going to come back to us with their portfolio and say, we've done 17 extensive master plans for this school district. This other person, entity, might say, we've only done 12. So we'll go through with our team and we'll score them on experience, we'll score them on if they meet the qualifications, and then we will slowly, you know, grade them and score them accordingly on what the experience is. So it's, the evaluation criteria is really like doing an interview for them. So at that point,
and then many of them now have the ability to put these assessments into software so that you can do cost escalations. If you're doing a five-year plan, like what today's dollars, what it would be by the time that fifth year rolls around, and you can continue to continuously update it, we can do that ourselves.
Right. So these books of what we see now in our facilities master plan is very archaic compared to what we will be getting on this RFQ process. Like Penny's saying, comes with software, comes with updating, we can project. It's just really getting things in order the way we should. It makes it easier. We're starting to project which direction we're going or where to start.
Would it be possible to go back and just see what our original 2016 master facilities plan cost, and then let the board know that, and then maybe what our update was in 2017? Certainly doesn't seem like any of our needs at our sites have, I shouldn't say that, we've done a whole lot since 2016, but I think there's still a lot of identified tier 1, 2, and 3 projects that are still there, and plus new ones. Mm-hmm. So I think that I think it is an important item. I'm just kind of concerned of the cost.
Definitely. So we can kind of go into that and share with you more. And like I said, it's the RFQ process. We're asking to go out for it. I mean, obviously, if we're awarding, we'd come back to the board with the contract amount and which that would be for approval.
Any other discussion? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7 yes. Thank you very much, Mrs. Lossing. Mr. Barnett.
Thank you.
Let's see. That looks like the last item. Meeting adjourned.